In Denver, Colorado, Jamie Sanchez obeyed the Lord's call and opened the Drip Cafe to create jobs to help unhoused people get back on their feet. Of course, the LGBTQ community began persecuting him for his Christian beliefs. His inspiring story of standing boldly for God's truth in the face of great opposition is part of our Impact series, and we'll send you the DVD as our thanks for your gift to AFA. Visit afa.net/spiritualwar. afa.net/spiritualwar.
Welcome to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve, Senior Pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas. Now, here's Pastor Jeff.
Well, good morning and welcome to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. We are fresh from the concert we had last night at First Baptist Texarkana with C.C. Winans. It was a great concert. A sellout crowd, although the weather kept some people from coming because it was bad weather in our neck of the woods. And praise the Lord, we didn't have any tornado sirens go off. That would have been a devastating thing because we would have had to clear out the worship center. So we didn't have any of that. Everybody had a great time. CC is a She's a great worship leader. Not only does she have a great voice, but she has a great presence. She loves the Lord, and she leads the audience to the throne of grace. And so it was a wonderful time. Well, I wanted to read to you from Proverbs 23:23. Proverbs is the book of wisdom. It's a good thing to develop the habit of reading a proverb a day. I was taught in college as a young believer, a proverb a day keeps the devil away. So 31 proverbs, one for every day of the month. Proverbs 23, verse 23 says, "Buy truth and do not sell it. Get wisdom and instruction and understanding." Well, I have developed a friendship with my guest who is on today, who has wisdom, instruction, and understanding. He has helped many, many ministries and people over the years with their reputation and with their navigating difficulties in the church or in their business. And he is Dr. Phil Cook, author, speaker, television producer, and media consultant. And his newest book, and we've talked, had Phil on the program before talking about his book, but there's so much to dive into on this book. It's called Church on Trial, How to Protect Your Congregation, Mission, and Reputation During a Crisis. So, Dr. Phil, I guess I've never called you that before, but Dr. Phil, welcome to the program.
That's okay. I don't really go by that too much. It does sound weird, so my friends just call me Phil.
So my producer here, Jay Budzalowski, he says, you're talking to Dr. Phil Cook, PhD, not D-Min, not any of these fly-by-night doctorates. That's yours, right? Is a real one.
Well, they're all real. They're just different kinds, so that's okay.
Yeah, I got the D-Min, you got the PhD. PhD is much harder to get. Okay, so Phil, I was in, before the Lord called me to preach, I was a salesman. I was selling specialty chemicals for an alco chemical company. And one of the things that we were taught as salesmen is this phrase, perception is reality. And that's not 100% true, but there's a lot of truth to that. And they said, hey, when you're out selling, you just remember that, how the customer or potential customer views you is very, very important, because perception is reality in many people's minds. Now, you talk about that in your book. Yes. You have the quote from Robin Cohn, I think is how you say your name, "You are what people mm-hmm. think you are." So how true is that phrase, perception is reality?
It's especially true in this media-driven culture we live in. People see the news, they're seeing social media, they're seeing online reports, they're hearing people talk. You know, the funny thing about social media is I'm convinced some people really shouldn't have a voice out there. But with social media, everybody gets to chime in on whatever subject of the day there is. So the problem is, you can be a great pastor, but if people think you're a no-talent hack, that's going to really damage the possibilities of your church growing and people visiting. So I think we do have to recognize that our perception does matter in this media-driven culture we live in today. So that's especially important when it comes to reputation. You know, so many people have said it takes decades to build a reputation and seconds to, you know, tear it apart. So I think reputation does matter, perception matters. Not that it's not something that we need to be, you know, in bondage to, but it's certainly something we need to consider today because there's so many voices coming from so many places.
Now, I saw, and Phil, I know you know about this, but the big news, I say big news, but it is important news that came from the White House was Kid Rock got Bill Maher into a dinner with President Donald Trump, two guys that have been very vocally disparaging to one another over the years, and he got them together. And Kid Rock had told Bill Maher, hey, when you meet Trump, you're going to find out he's not what you've been told he is. So thinking along those lines, Phil, if you were consulting Donald Trump, because I've heard that a lot from people. They say Trump is very warm and likable, but people hate his guts. So the perception is very negative in the minds of many people.
Right.
But that's not reality.
No, it's not. And I've never met him, but I've heard from a lot of people who have that's exactly right. And the truth is, I think, you know, he tends to spout off a lot about stuff. He can be very harsh in his comments. So I think that contributes to it. And I think, you know, of course, Trump derangement syndrome is real. I mean, I know people that actually really like Trump's policies, but hate his guts. That's just really, it's a funny thing. They just absolutely hate him, even though they really can't say about, you know, tell you any policy they disagree with. So it's a great case that I think, I will say this for Trump. Considering how much criticism he's gotten in the last, you know, 6 or 8 years, how much the media has been against him, how much he's been attacked, you almost have to have that hardcore shell, that crusty, you know, demeanor to survive that in many ways. I mean, I don't know that I could survive the amount of criticism he's taken in the media, national press, all these kind of places. So it's an interesting paradox. His personality, I think, does help contribute to the criticism, but it also helps, I think, him survive this insane amount of criticism that he gets. So he's an unusual case, I have to admit.
Well, his tenacity is something for everybody to say, hey, I may hate the guy, but hats off to you, the fact that you take a beating like a Timex watch. You take a licking and keep on ticking. And I don't know very many pastors. Phil, you know more pastors than I do. I don't know very many guys that could do what he's done in terms of being disparaged constantly without quitting.
Yeah, you just have to keep your head down and move forward. And I think he's doing that. It's just interesting. I was just listening to the news report before your show began on the station, and it's just interesting that how people don't understand the tariff situation. They just spout off about all kind of stuff that they hate about him, and without ever going deep. And that's one of my big issues today. I'm just shocked at the culture today and how everybody has an opinion about stuff they know nothing about. And we see it in the church. At my blog at philcook.com, I wrote a post just this week about Christian mobs. You know, we tend to, I've seen situations where pastors failed. Pastors had they were convicted of sexual abuse or accused of sexual abuse or financial abuse or leadership abuse or whatever. And they need to be dealt with biblically and legally, of course. However, I see so many people jump on that bandwagon of criticism without even knowing the facts. I saw one guy jump on one particular case recently, and he had all his facts wrong. He was pretty much completely devoid of the truth. And as Christians, we need to step back and say, let's just ask, is my comment going to be positive? Is it going to contribute to the conversation? Is it firsthand knowledge or is it second or thirdhand knowledge? Why am I even speaking into this on social media? So I think as Christians, we have to raise the bar a little bit before we just suddenly respond to things that we read in the news or see on social media. That's part of our witness to the world.
Yeah, good point. Well, the idea that perception is reality, Phil, what do you do when your life, your business, your church, or your political party, as we want to talk about today, is perceived negatively? How do you navigate through that negativity?
That's an interesting question because, you know, as a Christian and as a conservative, guys like you and I have been at the bad end of the stick our whole life. I mean, I've seen television my whole life where in primetime TV they make fun of us. They make fun of our causes, make fun of what we value. It's just become a way of life. If you're conservative, and particularly if you're a conservative Christian, just hearing the criticism has just become a way of life. It's happened to us all the time. And I think the thing to just do is keep our eyes on the prize. You know, it's not, first of all, I don't think you ever win anybody to Christ through an argument. I think ultimately we have to live the kind of lives that people want to emulate. Rodney Stark, the great sociologist from Baylor, once said that the single greatest reason people convert is because they want to be like those people. And so my question to Christians is, are we living a life that other people look at and think, wow, I want to be like those people? And I think, you know, divorce is a good example. Obviously, the statistics are Christians are better at, you know, marriage than the secular world. We don't divorce as high a rate as the secular world. However, our divorce rate is still nothing to be proud of. And I wonder if we as Christians had such amazing marriages, if we put such a commitment and such an effort into our marriage, that the world would look at that and think, you know what, I'm not sure about this Jesus thing, but I want a marriage like those people have. I want to experience that. I just think it could be a powerful evangelism tool if we started living our life according to the Bible, doing what the Bible says, the way the Bible says it. I just think it would start having a real impact on people.
Yeah, amen. Well, Phil, one of the things that, you know, when you think of perception as reality is we've seen these congressional hearings with, you know, entities in the government. The most recent one was with NPR. And the right. lady that runs NPR was trying to say we're unbiased and we're, you know, totally in the middle and all that stuff. Well, even Bill Maher, who has the HBO show Real Time with Bill Maher on Fridays, this is what he had to say about that.
The heads of NPR and PBS testified before Congress this week amid accusations of liberal bias. Should the government continue to send taxpayer dollars to public broadcasters? Well, a little background here. I mean, they've been after them for the Republicans have wanted to get rid of PBS for as long as I can remember. This crowd will probably do it. I mean, I also read my namesake, Catherine Marr, was head of NPR, and, you know, she said, we're completely unbiased. Give me a break, lady. I mean, they're crazy far left.
So, give me a break, lady. They're crazy far left. But to have the audacity, it's almost like doubling down on what you know is a lie. So, in your opinion, Phil, how is NPR, what is their perception in America?
It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. I mean, only far left people really support them anymore. The problem with that is there's a lot of billionaires out there who are far left. You know, they constantly are criticizing Elon Musk for being a billionaire who supports Trump. But the truth is there are far, far more billionaires in the Democratic Party than there are the Republican Party. And there is some criticism. There's some conversations out there that if we defund NPR, these left-wing billionaires will step up and start funding it, and it'll even get more left-wing. So it's a debate back and forth. Well, what frustrates me is why has it taken so long to get to this point? Why, you know, we've known they're left-wing for decades. Why, you know, Bill Maher was right. We've been trying to get rid of it for a long time, but where have the politicians been? Why haven't we had these hearings before? So I just think that it has gotten out of control. And I have to say, I fault a lot of Republican congressmen for where have they been during all this time. And so many of these things that are coming into light right now, we've known about this for a long time. So I don't know if they've been asleep at the wheel or what. I'm glad it's finally, these things are finally getting an audience and they're happening out there. But it's frustrating that we've known about this for such a long time and so little has been done.
Well, the idea that this Catherine Marr would sit there before Congress and just lie through her teeth that we're totally unbiased, that wouldn't set well with you, would it, if you were her manager?
Absolutely not. You know, here's the funny thing. In the digital age, you can't hide anymore. I tell pastors all the time, you know, that DUI that you got in college that you thought everybody had forgotten about, that's going to show up in a Google search. I think about Google not so much in terms of search, but about reputation management. You know, I actually had one pastor one time tell me, "Phil, it probably would be best if you didn't tell my congregation about my yacht." And I said, "Well, you know, you're an idiot. Number one, I can go on Google and get the title of the boat. And if I've got Google Earth, I can get a satellite shot of the boat sitting at the dock. You just can't hide. In the old days, before Google, you could hide stuff. Now you just can't do that anymore. So we need to understand. And you leave the radio station when you're done.
Let me break in, Phil. We're up against a break. We're talking to Dr. Phil Cook. You're listening to Real Truth for Today, Pastor Jeff Shreve. We'll be right back.
This is Real Truth for Today. Podcasts of the program are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. We're talking to Dr. Phil Cook. We're talking about image. And The Church on Trial is the title of his book, or Church on Trial, How to Protect Your Congregation, Mission, and Reputation During a Crisis. And image, not from the standpoint of we're fabricating this facade, but how, what you really are, and how is that perceived by the congregation and by the world outside. And so, Phil, we kicked off with Proverbs 23:23, buy truth and do not sell it, get wisdom and instruction and understanding. You know, when it comes to the business of the church, let's say, lots of pastors don't have wisdom and instruction and understanding on the business side of things, and on the, you know, they want to teach the Bible and they've been to seminary to teach the Bible, but sometimes they miss out on some basic things of how to get that message across and how that message is being perceived. Would you say that's true?
Absolutely. You know, it's true, Jeff. The Bible schools, seminaries, Bible training centers, they don't teach pastors about the media-driven culture we live in today. They don't teach pastors about social media, about video, about the online world, websites. I'll give you a great example. In my research, virtually 100% of new visitors, before they visit your church, will check you out online. And yet, so many churches' websites are incredibly lame. I mean, if your website is the thing that causes somebody to decide whether or not to visit your church, wow, that website ought to be the best thing you do. That's really, really important. In fact, I tell pastors, forget the biographies, forget all the information. Your website is designed for people to decide whether or not they want to visit your church. But bless their hearts, pastors don't know this stuff. Nobody tells them this stuff. So we need to train pastors in a way to not just preach well, share the gospel well, lead a church well, but also how to do it in this media-driven culture that we live in today, because it really does impact your voice, how you get your voice out there. You've been in the media for a long time because of this radio program, your national television program. You've been immersed in it for so long, you understand how it works. Mm-hmm. Sadly, most pastors don't get that.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that you and I talked about this at an NRB a few years back, during the pandemic, when churches were shut down for a time and everything was online, the smaller churches really got hurt, because the way I perceive things, the strength of some of those smaller churches was in pastoral care, and not so much the preaching aspect of the church, which is critical. But when you lost the pastoral care arm because you couldn't visit people and things like that, then you were exposed as, we don't have a strong teaching ministry in the church, and that was critical.
Yeah, I remember during the pandemic that I thought, because our company is built around helping churches use media effectively. We consult and advise and produce programming for churches, all kinds of things. And because of that, I thought we'd be out of business during the pandemic. But I got flooded with calls from pastors literally around the world, and ended up doing these massive teaching sessions on Zoom. I mean, we taught a couple hundred pastors in Russia, 400 pastors in Australia, 160 pastors in South America, really how to use a live stream and how to maximize it and how to get it out there in front of people. because they just didn't know. And it's such a powerful tool. And yet, like I say, they don't teach this in Bible college or seminary. So pastors really don't understand. So I recommend to pastors all the time, look, talk to the young people in your church. They get video. They get social media. Sit down with them. If you're a small church and you can't afford to bring in a consultant or advisor or a coach to come in and teach you and your team, at least talk to some kids in your college group, in your high school group. Talk to them about how you could use social media more effectively, how you could use short videos, because they often know very, very well and can really help.
Yes. Okay. So, Phil, I want to pose something to you. If you were hired by the Democrat Party, leave the church, let's go into the world of politics for a second. If you were hired by the Democrat Party and said, hey, we have a perception problem. The recent poll, I think it was NBC poll, said 27% of America looks favorably on the Democratic Party, and that went down to 11% among independents, which would be a pretty important number there. What would you advise them to do? What would be your counsel if you're meeting with the powers that be for the Democrat Party?
Well, first of all, I would say you need to listen. You absolutely need to listen. I think there's so, you know, one interesting thing I've discovered in the communication world is the farther to the extremes you get, the less likely you are to listen. And so what we're finding is the Democrats have gone so left, they just think their world is the only one that exists. I look at guys like Charlie Kirk who are out there interviewing kids on college campuses. They're stunned that somebody else thinks abortion is wrong. They're stunned that somebody thinks conservative values matter. They're shocked because they live in this echo chamber. So number one, I would recommend the Democrats need to start listening to the culture out there, because you're never going to right the ship unless you realize, wait a second, there's a significant group of people out there that don't want boys playing in women's sports. There's a significant group that want justice done, not just arrest these wrongdoers and criminals, but let's make justice happen, put them in jail. I think that they just don't realize how far, or I should say how many people in today's culture leans toward the conservative side. So you always start by listening. This is not a bad thing for the church to do either. I always start by listening to see what the culture is saying out there. And I think that would at least wake them up, hopefully, to the fact that, wow, we are more extreme than we ever thought. And I love Elon Musk's quote that, you know, I was a Democrat my whole life, and I never moved. It was the Democratic Party that mm-hmm. shifted. They shifted way, way, way left. I'm still where I always was, but now I'm a conservative. So it's interesting how far that shift has happened.
Yeah, it is. And that's why somebody like a Bill Maher starts to make a lot of sense, because he recognizes, hey, the party has... You've gone off on the fringe, and you're never going to win doing that. Now,
that's
I don't
exactly
know,
right.
Phil. I don't know if you saw this, but Tim Walz was with Beto O'Rourke in Texas. I forget which city they did some rally, and he actually made the statement. You know, we lost because we didn't press in harder on DEI and woke agenda and ideology, and it's almost like they're brain dead. It's like America doesn't want that.
I know. I'm thinking, did you look at the electoral map on election night? You know, were you paying attention to the numbers? It is an interesting thing. They actually do believe. But I'll tell you, this is the argument, or this is the discussion that we need to wake up conservative people for. I'm still stunned at the number of conservative people that don't vote every year. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, if there was anything I could do right now, it would be to inspire more and more Republicans and conservative people to step up, because we are one election away. You know, the midterms come up in less than 2 years, and we are one election away from losing all of this. So we need to really think about how important this is and get people who believe in conservative values and Christian values to get out there and vote. It really does matter.
What was your take on the Cory Booker 25-hour monologue that he did?
I think my take was that of all the things, that's the most epic thing the Democrats have done since the election, and it was absolutely underwhelming. I don't really understand what the point was. And it serves a good example of how so much of what the left does is for show. If they really cared about the climate, they wouldn't be you know, destroying Teslas across the country. If they really cared about these things, they wouldn't be behaving the way they do. So, you know, does he really care about these issues, or are he just doing it as a publicity stunt? I think he's doing it as a publicity stunt. Unfortunately, it didn't get a ton of publicity. I don't really understand ultimately what his point was.
Yeah, I didn't get that either. You know, one of the things that I've pushed back on with the Democrats is, okay, well, what's your plan when it comes to the war in Ukraine? Do you want to just have that go on indefinitely and just keep pumping hundreds of billions of dollars into it? This one guy that goes always likes to email me and tell me how I'm doing everything wrong and my points are off and all this. I said, well, what's their plan? Because I don't know what it is. He said, well, you can go online and look it up on their Democrat platform, you know, whatever. It's like, well, most people aren't doing that. So, yeah. Phil, would you say that in America today, the average American has no idea what the Democrats, what their plan is to build back better or better the country? Is that a...
I think that their policy has been so focused on Trump, just whatever Trump wants to do, let's be against it, that they've really not stepped back and said, we need to formulate an actual plan. If Trump was out of the picture right now, what would they actually stand for? And it's funny, just by being against Trump so far since the election, they're standing for women, men competing against women. They're standing for bringing back all those gang members that Trump deported. Therefore, violence in the streets. It's just amazing what it appears they stand for simply because they won't step up and say, okay, here's what we really believe. Here's what we want to stand for and what we really want to pursue. It's just interesting that they've been so caught up in anti-Trump rhetoric, they've not really paused long enough to say, okay, what do we actually believe here? And I don't think they know.
All right. From a consultant standpoint, if you were hired by Tesla and they said, we have a crisis at Tesla, obviously there's a big problem with Tesla right now, not with their product, but with the way people right. are coming after them because of Elon Musk, how would you counsel them?
You know, one of the strategies in communication is when something is so ridiculous, mocking is probably the best way to go. And I've seen some social media posts that do these people not know that you know, when they destroy a Tesla, the insurance company is going to buy a new one and give it right back to that person, and which Elon will benefit. You know, Tesla, Musk and Tesla will benefit from this. So they're actually helping the other side more than they realize. So sometimes being mocking and just making them realize just how stupid their thinking and their behavior is a legitimate way to communicate your message out there. But I do think that Tesla needs to let people know, you know, the impact of what all this is happening. And fortunately, it's not, Tesla's a huge company. And the other aspect of mocking is, like I said earlier, if you really cared about the climate, why are you destroying the number one electric car maker in America? Why are you trying to do that? And I love when Tim Walz, you mentioned Walz a minute ago, when he was making fun of the stock going down, not realizing that a huge amount of stock is held by the government, his own government up there. This teachers union in his state has a huge amount of Tesla stock. So he's out there in public making fun of Tesla stock going down, realizing that it's damaging his very electorate. So these positions the left is taking sometimes are just so ridiculous. I think mocking is probably the best approach.
What do you think? You know, Trump has a certain constitution where he can handle the disparagement better than most, maybe better than anybody else I've ever seen. Do you see Elon Musk having that same kind of rough exterior to handle this?
I don't think that he has the same has the same style as Trump. However, keep in mind, this is a guy that built a car, the most successful electric car company in the country. He's built rockets that we catch when they come back. We catch the rockets and reuse them again. He's built this huge space company. He's also built the Boring Company. You know, they're building an underground tunnel under Las Vegas to help them relieve the traffic. And they're talking about building one in Los Angeles as well. This guy is used to getting out there and tussling and creating new things. So I don't think this kind of criticism really bothers him too much. I think he's probably got a pretty tough exterior as well. He doesn't come across as gruff as Trump does, mm-hmm. but I have to say the guy's accomplished so much But to do that, you've got to be pretty tough to do the stuff that he's accomplished.
Well, I've had somebody push back on me and say, you know, you're putting your faith in Elon Musk and assigning to him these good motives and taking everybody in government, all the bureaucrats, and assigning to them bad, nefarious motives. But I can't see any scenario where Elon Musk is benefiting from doing what he's doing at Doge. It's hurting him. It's not helping him.
That's exactly right. That's exactly. These are just people that are lashing out and don't really understand what they're talking about. You know, George Soros bought 200 radio stations right before the election. You talk about interfering in the political process and interfering in government. And Elon is just trying to get rid of the waste and the corruption and the bloat. I think that's if there was no waste and no corruption, just the sheer bloat of government has gotten so big and so useless that I just applaud what he's trying to do. And I'd say this is exactly what I voted for, and I'd like to see more of this.
Amen to that. Okay, shifting gears on you, Phil. I saw an interview with Mel Gibson, and they're planning, I think, this summer to start shooting Passion of the Christ 2. What do you know about that?
They've been real quiet. I actually have an NDA with a lot of the crew and the actors to not talk about it. I see Jim Caviezel will be Jesus. Well, the original was 20 years ago, so Jesus is going to be 20 years older for the resurrection. So we have to be careful. They're going to have to do some real makeup work, I think. But no, let me just say this. People forget the impact the original Passion of the Christ had on the culture. You know, up until that time, there weren't Christian movies like we see today in Hollywood. Most executives and studios lived in New York or L.A. in Hollywood, and they considered the Midwest just flyover states. They didn't travel to the Midwest. And when The Passion made so much money, keep in mind it made more money than any movie up to that time in the history of Hollywood. It made so much money that it really got Hollywood's attention. And they realized for the first time there are millions and millions of people in this country that take their faith seriously. And so Hollywood started listening. Well, what the Democrats need to do today, they started listening and paying attention. And we see today the House of David, Amazon put up $200 million for that team to create the House of David. We're seeing other movies, the Kingdom Story Network. We're seeing other great Christian efforts. And I think a lot of it came because of the boldness and the success of The Passion of Christ. So I'm all for the sequel. I hope it goes well.
Amen. We're talking to Dr. Phil Cook, author, speaker, television producer, media consultant, and his latest book is Church on Trial, How to Protect Your Congregation, Mission, and Reputation During a Crisis. You're listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here, and we're up against a break, but we'll come back more with Dr. Phil. Don't go away. Because of the generous donations provided from listeners just like you, Preborn has rescued over 330,000 babies. But every day, the abortion industry is taking thousands of babies' lives. We have to save them. So please donate your best gift to save more babies at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
If you'd like to contact Pastor Jeff, email PastorJeff@FromHisHeart.org. Now, back to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff Shreve here, talking to Dr. Phil Cook. We're talking about perception is reality and how we need to know how we're perceived as a church, as an individual, and as a business. It's very, very important to know who you are, to live out the truth, as we've been using the springboard verse, Proverbs 23:23, buy truth and do not sell it, get wisdom and instruction and understanding. Those things are critical. Your life has to be based in truth. Your church has to be based in truth. Your business has to be based in truth. You provide good, solid goods and services to give to the public. And then you have to know how you're perceived. And so, Phil, let's talk about pastors. And one of the things that's a great interest to me, and I think to our listeners also, the different stages that a church goes through with their pastor. Very, very difficult for a church to gain any traction if they're changing pastors every 2 or 3 years. But your counsel to a pastor when he first comes versus having been there 6 or 7 years versus having been there maybe 15 to 20 years, how would you go about that?
Well, early on, it's about building trust. You know, trust is really the glue that holds a church together. And that's why scandals are so devastating. In my book, Church on Trial, I mentioned that 27% of the people that leave the church entirely leave it because of a scandal at their church or how poorly the church handled it. So they're not going to another church. This is 27% of the people that leave and are never coming back to church at all. They walk away from God. So trust is incredibly, incredibly important. And when a scandal happens, you lose it. So a young pastor, someone starting out in ministry, I think needs to go out of their way to build a sense of trust with the congregation, with your donors, supporters, if you're a ministry, whatever. That's really, really critical. Then after that trust is built, you can start to spread your wings. And I do meet pastors from time to time who have been in a church for 20 years, and they're still terrified of the congregation. They're terrified of the elder board. I think if that's the case, you're in the wrong place. I think at some point in your career, after you've been there a few years, you've built that sense of trust, it's time to be a leader and to step up. I met one pastor who said, you know, Phil, when I make a decision, I feel guilty. And I said, man, you're in the wrong job. You need to move to some other role. So I think that you start by building a trust, then you start to spread your wings, and then as a senior pastor down the road, you really have a chance to make your mark. You have a chance to lead the congregation in places they've never been, try new initiatives and new projects they've never done before. But because of those years of trust, they understand. I know one pastor that I worked with, a very large church, had a crisis happen at the church. Had nothing to do with the church. It was one of the staff members, an older staff member who had gotten into a sexual situation, and the pastor was in Israel on a tour. They called him and said, you need to get back right away. The press is coming. It was in a big city. It was generating a lot of press. And so they called me and said, would you fly in and let's, you know, work out a strategy for how to deal with this. So I got there, and I got all the staff members into a room. Before, you know, the pastor dealt with the press, I had the pastor come in. And it was interesting that when he walked in, all the staff members were nervous. They knew this was going to be very critical in the press. They didn't know what was going to happen. But the minute that pastor walked in, there was a physical sigh of relief from everybody in the room. It was like, okay, pastor's here. It's going to be okay. That is the place you want to be as a pastor, where you're so trusted. Your experience has been so extensive. You've made such good, godly decisions over the years that your team, your congregation feels like, okay, pastor's here. Everything's going to be okay. So I think that's the goal. If you have a goal to be a long-term pastor, that's a great goal to pursue.
Okay, Phil, when you deal with pastors, pastors have different personalities. I think for a lot of us, we kind of are, especially if you're not a naturally aggressive driver-type personality, maybe you're more laid back. Sometimes you can think, well, maybe I'm not cut out for this. But now you've dealt with lots of pastors over the years. Not everybody is Bobby Knight or, you know, that kind of, I'm taking over. We're doing it this way. You know, I think about James McDonald, obviously,
yes.
Major scandal. He's just a naturally gifted guy to take charge. He can make things happen, but there's collateral damage with that. What have you seen over the years with the core talents that you need to have to make it work?
You know, I learned a valuable lesson with my team at Cook Media Group years and years ago, that I used to hire people that were like me because I like being with people like me. I have fun with people like me. And I suddenly realized, I woke up one day and realized, wait a second, I don't need a bunch of Phil Cooks. I need people that compliment me or are good at what I'm not good at. And that completely changed the makeup of our company. I started bringing in people that were experts in areas I'm not good at, strong in areas I'm weak. And I think the same thing goes for a pastor. Your team, your immediate team, your executive pastor, administrators right around you, even assistants, are incredibly important hires. And, you know, we have a joke at church that we hire quickly and fire slowly. I'd like to reverse that. I would encourage pastors, let's start taking our time, vetting people, finding the people that would complement my skill set the most. Let's bring them onto the team. And if we find it doesn't work, let's move them on. Let's help them find, you know, a place where God could use them in some other area. But I think that core team around you, and like you say, if you're timid, if you're a pastor who's not bold, or you're more on the timid side, let's find an executive pastor who could make those tough decisions, who's a you know, it doesn't mind hiring, firing, being in front of people, whatever. Whatever you're weak at, find the people around you that are good at those areas, and that makes a formidable team.
Who would you say that you've worked with over the years that you would encourage other pastors to study and learn from, because this guy is doing it really well?
I think, you know, right off the top of my head, I just filmed a project with Jack Graham, pastor at Prestonwood Church in Dallas. We went up to the Ark Encounter in Kentucky and did filmed a series of television programs for his media ministry. And he's grown one of the largest churches in the country, not overbearing, super low-key guy, very just a really strong leader, but has an amazing sense of trust with his congregation. And they've been through so much. Multiple campuses, spin-off churches, all kind of situations. They've just done some remarkable things. And yet Jack is always on point. And I'll tell you, one of the things that I admire about him is his character. He doesn't take chances with sexual issues, doesn't take chances with financial issues. He lives a very, very, a life of integrity. Let me mm-hmm. say it that way. And I'm just so impressed with what he's accomplished and what he's done. And the team he's built around him is quite amazing, too. I work with his team as much as I work with Jack, and his team is really quite remarkable. So the first person that would come to mind would probably be Jack Graham.
Yeah, I can echo that. You know, I think one of the things that really stands out to me about Jack, although he's such a great guy, he's very humble. And he treats people with respect, and you know, you can be a pastor of a church of 25 people, and he's going to elevate you and treat you like you're special and precious to the kingdom, which you are. And
that's exactly right. And you know what, Jack? What, he's got a 7,000 seat auditorium, the sanctuary, 7,000 seats, and it's packed constantly. And yet, after a message, it's not. Jack will wade right into that crowd and start hugging people and shaking hands with people and talking with people. He's not one of these guys that's escorted on and off the stage. He is just a regular person, and people love that. And I think that's why Prestonwood is such a great church, and they've got a great school. They've built a magnificent school. It's just a great model for pastors to look at.
Phil, what do you say to the pastor? I'm thinking about a particular guy that was so influential, and by the name of Rick Warren, that kind of went out the door, you know, ordaining women at his church, and then Saddleback got kicked out of the Southern Baptist Convention for that, ordaining women. What would you say to him if you sit down with him? Because he has a media ministry, and Rick has been very influential, but he's not perceived well in the conservative Christian community.
I there's a couple things there. Number one, I think Rick has done so well over the years that he got to a point where it doesn't really matter to him. He's going to do what he thinks is right, and whether that's ordaining women or whatever. And I think, now this is, you and I may disagree over this, but I think ordaining women is not a absolute critical reason to go to heaven or not. So I wish that was more of a ongoing conversation in the church. I wish we could have more conversations about that, simply because there's enough evidence on both sides that makes it an interesting conversation. And I think it's okay to land on either side. I have pastors I work with that are don't want to have women in the pulpit, others that do. So they're both great. They're all great pastors and have great churches. So I think he's probably got to a place where he could step out and do something he probably believed in for a long time, even if it cost him some reputational damage. But I still think, I mean, I know Rick, and I've been with him. I was with him in Europe last year at a huge, huge conference. So he still has an amazing following, and it's a good question. It's one of these late night conversations in front of a fireplace to have.
Well, I think it's hard not to love Rick. I mean, he's a lovable guy, very demonstrative, always giving out hugs and, you know, big teddy bear kind of guy. And I've learned a lot from the guy, and but I know that the perception being reality thing has taken a big hit for him.
The thing I like about Rick is he will share the gospel with anybody, anytime. I've seen him lead waitresses to Christ. I've seen him lead bus drivers to Christ. I've never seen anybody that witnesses to everyday people as much as Rick. It's just really quite remarkable. He just has a real passion to talk to people about Jesus. And boy, it's hard to fault him for that.
Well, you know, when we were talking about Donald Trump, how the perception of Donald Trump is he's this evil ogre that cuts you at the knees and all that. And then when people meet him, they find out, hey, you're way different than what I was told you are. You don't have horns and that kind of thing. I also think that is probably true when it comes to John MacArthur. MacArthur preaches hard, but he's very tender when you meet the guy, or so I'm told. I have not gotten the privilege of meeting him, but very, very different maybe in person than he is in the pulpit, not from a hypocritical standpoint, but just from, hey, I'm not talking to you directly. I'm talking to a group of people. If the shoe fits, wear it, as opposed to I'm sitting down with you one-on-one, then it's love and truth, where love really dominates as opposed to truth dominating maybe in the pulpit. How do you see that?
I agree 100%. I know many, many church members at Grace Community Church in L.A., and they love him, absolutely adore John MacArthur. They're crazy about him. And it does tell me that, personally, he's different than what we see in the press. And honestly, what has created a lot of that harsh kind of vibe about him is he's willing to go in the secular media and go toe-to-toe with secular reporters. And he's going to tell the truth. He's not going to, you know, do a love fest. He's going to speak the truth. And as a result, that's got him a lot of criticism because he's not, you know, I do think we have a problem in the church today where everybody's happy to talk about God is love, Jesus is love. You know, whatever lifestyle you want is fine. Whatever way you want to live is fine. Jesus is all about love. I think we need to be talking about the fear of God a little bit more, and I would love to see more people step up. You know, when I was thinking the other day, when I've had opportunities in my life to sin, to step over a line or a boundary, it wasn't the love of God that kept me from stepping over that line. It was the fear of God. And I think having a healthy fear of God would help deal with a lot of these crisis situations we have in the church today.
So good. We just have a couple minutes left, Phil. I want to talk to you about your former governor, Gavin Newsom. Do you think this is the right time for him to start his own little podcast and kind of, it seems like he's setting the stage to run for president?
Oh, he's totally setting the stage. And I'll tell you, I've never seen such a bold-faced lie in my life. I mean, the idea that suddenly he's a new guy, that suddenly he's open to all these conservative values is just remarkable. I mean, he's as hardcore a leftist as anyone I know. And he has thrown money away. There are billions in California that were dedicated to the homeless that he can't even account for. I get such a kick out of the fact that he's trying out this test of trying to be perceived as a different guy. But anybody that knows him at all, who's tracked with him at all, he's just been a disaster, absolutely unmitigated disaster for California. And only people that are so hard left, they would have to be blind by this, would ever vote for him for president. Because why in the world would you want to export what he's done in California to the rest of the nation? Oh, no.
Yeah,
I survived it, and I don't want to see it happen nationwide.
No, good point. Good point. Well, Dr. Phil Cook, thank you for being my guest today. You're a good friend, and I still want you to come by the church when you're in your travels so we can visit.
I'll do it. I love you, man. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, Phil. Well, the book is called Church on Trial, How to Protect Your Congregation, Mission, and Reputation During a Crisis. You can go to philcook.com to find out more. Cook is spelled with an E-C-O-O-K-E. And so always a wonderful time talking to Phil Cook. Well, thanks for listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. Tomorrow we're going to have Dr. Tom Askell on the program as we talk about things related to the church and politics, so you don't want to miss it. Go out today, shine for Christ, and share what great things the Lord has done for you, and God will use you as his witness. God bless.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.